This is CliffCentral.com.
Transformation Platform, I'm Adrian Groenewald. It's great to be with you. And I don't know why we're tackling this big elephant called health sector. We're going to do it over 3 weeks, in fact, at least for now. So I almost want to say the month of September in the Transformation Platform will be dedicated to transformation in the healthcare industry. And today will be an introduction. Okay, it's really going to be with Dr. Shanil Naidu, Medical Director, South Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa. Let me say this. Boehringer Ingelheim.
There you go, Boehringer Ingelheim.
Boehringer Ingelheim. I know it's a big company, but it's just the word. The name's not that simple. And then Judy Vondel.
Correct.
Judy Vondel, Director at Deloitte in the health.
I'm not a director, I'm a senior manager.
Senior manager at Deloitte, and she's in the specific sector, which they're going to help us make a bit of sense of the specific theme. Transformation Platform is about all issues around transformation. I mean, South Africa is a transforming society. The world is. Once a month, we look at technology transformation and the impact on leaders. So this is what this specific half hour is about. But the healthcare industry is a fascinating one. I don't know. I've kind of looked at it from a distance for a while now, thinking, where is it going? And then after a few calls with a colleague, I think we decided let's go for it. Let's give this a tackle. All right, guys, it's good to have you here. Thank you for joining us. And are you ready for it?
Let's go.
You're ready to set the scene, to speak on behalf of the industry. No, not in that sense. I like this health sector mission statement, but, you know, as with all things, most corporates have a vision statement and a mission statement. But let's look at this and then try and understand it a little bit more. It says, to provide leadership and guidance to the national health system in its efforts to promote and monitor the health of all people in South Africa, and to provide caring and effective services through a primary health care approach. Wonderful mission statement. Often it's like walking into a hospital and you see a mission statement on the wall and you go, wow, wouldn't it be nice if that could happen? But the reality and the mission is so far from each other. Your thoughts on this mission statement in general, if I could put it that way. Dr. Naidu?
I think there's a very good focus here on primary health care.
Mm.
Just a moment ago, you spoke about walking into a hospital and seeing a sign.
Mm.
Now, once you improve primary health care, you have fewer patients walking into that hospital. So what you want to do in a PHC setting is to control chronic illnesses more efficiently, more effectively. So you have, for example, hypertension, which is controlled. And thereafter, you'll avoid the stroke in 4 or 5 years' time.
Yeah.
So you don't want to see a hospital system that's crowded. This can be averted relatively easily, and I use the word relatively, by having effective primary healthcare strategies in place.
So a crowded hospital is a sign of a weak healthcare system.
Well put.
Okay. This wonderful mission statement, Judy?
Well, I think if you look at the background, I think there's a drive globally to have what they call universal healthcare coverage. And so we need to do it. We have to do it. Most countries are starting to focus on primary healthcare as being their drivers. But there is a challenge around that. I mean, we've got to make sure that we've got enough people in the right places for this to happen. And it's not just the sort of urban areas and the urban-rural areas. Mm. We've got to start looking at how do we put those primary healthcare facilities and those community healthcare workers into the rural and the deep rural areas. Because otherwise what happens is those people either never get access to care, or, as the doctor was saying, is that they present at a hospital, which is too far down the line for their treatment.
Just for those who don't know, primary health care, just distinguish for us.
Probably the simplest way is that your nurse-led service. So it's your very, very front start, so that, you know, your basic testing of anything health.
Okay, then that goes where? From primary health care it goes to?
Well, you should go primary health care, then into either a district hospital, and then it goes right the way through to your tertiary academic hospitals. So there's a referral process and a referral route.
Kind of the value chain? I don't know if that's the right word, but that's sort of the stops.
Those are the stops. I wouldn't necessarily call it the value chain, but that's a sort of a referral process and the referral route that you would traditionally follow as a patient.
All right, then the document that I was sent, in order to realize this mission, Let me just read what it then says. I mean, there's a lot more said goals and ambitions. But in order to realize this specific mission that I just read, it is envisaged that the national health system will incorporate all stakeholders. And that's always people's desire as a corporate, as anything. You want to bring all stakeholders in, i.e. government sector, NGOs, including religious and grassroots organizations, the private sector, and especially the communities. It is essential to obtain the active participation and involvement of all sectors of South African society in health and health-related activities. All sectors of the community, all members of households and families, and all individuals should be actively involved in order to achieve the health, consciousness, and commitment necessary for the attainment of goals set at the various levels. The people of South Africa have to realize that without their active participation and involvement, little progress can be made in improving their health status. All right, so that's very ambitious, like we always need to be, I guess. But let's be open about how we are doing here. How are we doing as far as this desire of how to achieve our mission?
I think this is part of a lot of the role that we end up playing. And I think, look, we are resource constrained. We need more doctors. We need more nurses for this to happen. We also need to develop the infrastructure that this all sits on. So there was an Operation Pakisa about 18 months ago that defined what an ideal clinic needs to look like. Effectively, every single primary healthcare clinic then looks the same. I think in terms of the involvement of everybody in that sort of cycle, you're talking public, private, you know, potentially other public institutions, that partnership is going to be essential, because to roll out an NHI is no easy feat. Mm. Aaron Witzleady has said, you know, that we're talking about an ultramarathon here.
Mm.
You know, it's not an immediate sort of setup. But what I think we're just lacking at the moment is that ability to sit down around the table and build that trust between the public, the private, and everybody else in the role play. There's kind of this apprehension that not everybody is in it for the same reasons, which is, I think, contrary to some of the work that we've done.
I mean, I'm honest to look at you must describe to me the enormity of this mission and the goals that we have to transform the healthcare industry. But if we're frank about ourselves, if you look at this mission statement and how they hope they can achieve it, or we hope we can achieve it, we want all community, all members, households, families, everyone involved in making it happen. But we need this same kind of effort for education in the country. We need the same kind of effort for safety and security. We need the same kind of effort for every sector of our society, economy. I mean, we need everyone to pull together. And in the end, we need this kind of energy everywhere. Isn't that so? And do we feel that healthcare is up there? Or is healthcare actually a bit of a stepchild on the side and the age-old word, ticking time bomb? You know, are we not dealing with it enough, doctor?
Well, at this moment in time, we find that our focus in healthcare is reactive in nature.
Mm.
And when we look at interventions, they need to be proactive. Now, early on, you referred to leadership in healthcare. But where does leadership reside? Is it a medical director of a pharmaceutical company? Is it an individual? Is it a family member? And that's where we've had this nebulous description of leadership. We need to have a situation where the individual is a leader. He's a leader in his or her family. The individual is a leader in the community. You have individual leaders in companies.
Mm.
And you have a situation where with leadership comes ownership.
Mm.
So I spoke about issues regarding primary healthcare. Now, we spoke about different types of healthcare systems, PHCs, then you have district hospitals, you have tertiary hospitals and academics and so forth. But the level of information should start right with the patient. Have you gone to a clinic to have yourself tested? HIV, diabetes, hypertension.
Mm.
Once you have community members involved at that level, then you'll have a top-down and a bottom-up approach to something. It's a mammoth task. But if you segment it, you will lose.
I mean, that's the thing is, Louis, a mammoth task. I mean, the leadership. Yeah. We say every person's first profession is leadership. We say that we are, as individuals, leaders. We've got to lead our own lives.
Can I just ask some questions from our two valued guests? We're in the leadership field, and we've redefined leadership over the years, and it all boils down to personal transformation of attitude and mindset. We had a Dr. Rolene Wagner here, head of the Freer Hospital. She's one of the candidates for the Woman of the Year.
Businesswoman of the Year.
But now, this woman was quite amazing what she did with the under-resourced hospital.
Mm.
And she realized immediately she can't blame or expect resources that just aren't there. Now, it goes down to personal attitude. So what happens in
and
her
we've
case,
made principals who are the same, under-resourced schools, and they somehow turn
yes.
around anyway. Good leadership.
Some principals do it and some don't because their understanding of leadership is not something belongs to people up there. It's about personal attitude. So we have to emphasize that all things are possible through good leadership. I love the spirit and the vision that you guys have put together. It's clear. It's clear what you need to do, what the country needs to do. To what extent, though, are we underestimating the need to train the leadership part of people out there? Because if that's lacking, one tends to blame. And then, of course, people have a pushback mentality. Your feelings on that, because I see often government is grossly underestimating the need to focus on the personal transformation aspect, because that's what leaders must do. It starts within themselves, not your position. Julie Madam Seller is a tremendous example of that. They wrote an e-book now about her, the interviews we had with her, and she's all about seeing the goodness of people and taking accountability as well. And we know time and time again the dramatic impact that people like principals do, individuals. In this case, Dr. Rolene, too. What a lovely example. So are we really focusing on leadership as well?
In my opinion, no. I mean, you look at it, and I think leadership is about taking accountability.
Yes.
And I think that's a very clear word that needs to come out, because there are, as we've said before, there are restraints. There are restraints in terms of just even getting the right medical equipment, having those working in facilities.
There will always be.
Yeah. But, you know, like the people who run their hospitals well don't wait for everybody to come around.
No, that's
they will go and fetch, and they will get local providers to come and help them.
Mm.
And I think it's about that drive.
Mm.
That.
Yes. Doctor, what do you think? Bring the leadership component in for a moment. Then I want us to unpack the industry and what it looks like.
I mean, just to piggyback on what you just said, have we grossly underestimated? Yes, we have. The fact that we are reactive in nature, the fact that we see millions of South Africans that are affected by communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases, that's evidence. That is objective evidence that we, as leaders, have underestimated the enormity of what we're facing right now.
Mm.
Now, a lot of it where we can say the ship has sailed, it actually hasn't.
No.
It hasn't.
Can't accept that.
No, it hasn't. And like I said, we should have a top-down approach. That's very, very important. But once we stop there, we will revert to a blame game. For example, why didn't the Minister of Health put this plan in place? But then the converse is true. Why didn't you as an individual do something? Mm. Why didn't you as a hospital manager do something? Like you said, they are phenomenal.
Our politics have been recently run by blame games. We promise everything out there, but are we promising accountability? Well, we've used the words, but what you're saying makes perfect sense. We appreciate what you're saying. It's always, the leadership is the only answer, really, really.
Well, somehow we can talk about a lot of technical things, and we will over the next few weeks. We can talk about a lot of issues, the emphasis on certain months, on certain health issues. There's a lot we can talk about, but in a country where there's a small tax base and a huge need and high unemployment, somewhere it's got to click that leadership is the answer. It's only leadership that can take an under-resourced school or under-resourced hospital or under-resourced whatever and miraculously create movement, successful movement. It's leadership that'll do that. Yes, the base understanding is there must be some technical expertise. Do we have the good doctors? Do we have the good nurses? Do we have the good, all of that?
Can I just ask a personal question of you two? It's an old man, so I'm a right. I'm entitled to do so. Do you two underestimate the tremendous power of your own personal convictions and your love for what you're doing, the merit of it, instead of focusing on this is all the challenges. Do you underestimate the impact that has on people around you?
Well, I would like to think no.
That's the point. You don't know what influence it can have and what. For instance, we are objective from the side, and we immediately picked up that kind of conviction you have, the integrity behind it, the authenticity. But I'm not quite sure if you fully realize the important value of that one. It starts with that kind of inner mindset. you know, and you mustn't ever let go of that.
Well, I think, I mean, I certainly believe in what I do. I'm passionate about what I do. And let's hope that, you know, as the dust settles, someone out there says, yes, he's done a fantastic job. He's made changes. And I hope that everyone has that mindset, that after the dust settles and a whole lot of people look at him or her and say that, that's a good job.
It's worth it, yes.
I think it's a very interesting space as well, because I think there are, I wouldn't say very few, but healthcare, education are two critical areas where you can make a difference.
Mm.
You know, everything that we go to work to do every single day has an impact on somebody. You know, and I think that intersect also between the health and the education is huge, because you know, there's a lot, and what we're finding, you know, with the diagnosis of older people, it's actually the kids that are pushing them to go and have go and get tested, go and do it, because they're learning about these things at school and saying, okay, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
So the education is coming through from bottom up as well.
Yeah.
But again, just the point is, please, speaking of very experienced in this area, don't underestimate the need for you to nourish yourself daily basis. You know, because if you're professional, you kind of put it behind you. Well, you can't put leadership behind you. It's a constant nourishment. Salespeople understand that out there. Every day you've got to psych themselves up. Professionals often don't do that. They underestimate the value of that. Is it emotional? Yes, but it's also entirely spiritual as well. You need to make sure that you are nourished every day by your source of your values. People, it's a body language that does communicate.
Well, I think, to a large degree, we need the leaders who run the hospitals to share that principle with. But we've seen it so many times where you have principals of schools sitting in our education show that we had. And the difference between the one and the other is an incredible passion and sense of mission in that school. And that's what distinguishes them. And we would need it in this industry, no doubt, if we're going to transform it. Let's unpack the industry just very quickly. What does it consist of? If you look at the whole healthcare industry, just now you mentioned kind of the hospital levels, but can we just look at that? You know, what are the different, you've got pharmaceutical or whatever. Let's just look at those different levels, the different components, the different stakeholders that we think should play a big role.
Okay, so let's look at it this way. Let's look at a patient journey.
Okay.
So a patient goes into a primary healthcare setting. They get diagnosed with diabetes. The primary healthcare setting itself requires government infrastructure. So there's your big role player there.
Mm.
Thereafter, you have nurses and medical doctors.
Mm.
So you have medical universities and nursing colleges and so forth churning out, hopefully, larger numbers of healthcare professionals.
Mm.
So there's your other role players.
Mm.
That patient requires a drug intervention, a pharmaceutical intervention. That's where your pharmaceutical companies come into play. You need these pharmaceutical companies to have a lot of research done to bring these innovative drugs to that patient.
Mm.
So that's where the research scientists come into play, those innovators. Now, that drug needs to be reimbursed in some shape or form, especially if the patient goes up the continuum to district hospitals, tertiary hospitals, into the private healthcare environment.
Mm.
So in order to have that reimbursed, you have funders, you have health insurance companies, and so forth.
Mm.
So if one looks at a patient journey, you start to get an idea as to the number of role players and the complexities that that individual is faced with and that individual and that compendium of care has.
Sure. Okay, Judy, what else? I mean, you've got your medical aid companies, you've got your practitioners, you've got your pharmacists, you've got you know, all the on the periphery, maybe, of the distribution. What else do we have in this whole healthcare industry?
Well, I was going to put the distribution in there, and then there are a lot of allied sort of services that sit on the side. You know, you go into a hospital, you need somebody to give you food, you need somebody to clean your linen. You know, there's medical waste management that goes in there. There's distribution. How do you get it from the port of entry, whether it's a medical device or a pharmaceutical product? How do you get that from that into the actual hands of the actual people themselves?
Hmm.
You know, and there's challenges and opportunities around that. But again, you talk about leadership. Is, you know, if we're going to be distributing these chronic meds, so HIV, you know, diabetes type meds, it's relatively, and I say relatively, easy to get it to somebody who's in an urban area. okay, even if they're in an urban rural area, mm-hmm. so our informal settlements, etc. But it gets more difficult once we get into the rural and the deep rural areas. But how is
like everything, education?
How do we look at the opportunities in that? Maybe around youth employment and setting up small businesses to get those meds to the grannies and the grandpas that are so far away. So I think there's a much bigger ecosystem that can play in healthcare, not just the medical practitioners themselves. And I think also one of my little kind of bugbears is task shifting. So getting the least person to do the job. So does the doctor have to take the blood pressure or can the nurse take the blood mm-hmm. pressure? But also I think we can be quite technical about, does that person have to be a clinician to do that job? Now, at the moment, all your CEOs of hospitals have to be doctors. It's what the minister wants. But I query, does it have to be a minister, a doctor? Mm. You know, if you are a good leader and you know how to run a facility.
The American system.
Yeah, you don't necessarily need to do that. So that would then free up some of those clinical gaps to say, okay, a non-clinician can do this because we can use those vital resources in other parts of the kind of value.
You see, a hospital is really much a business. There are resources, so surely the tremendously scarce medical expertise should be used primarily. Now, many doctors are good leaders, obviously, but your point is valid. The American system, they turn it into business, you know, run by MBAs, etc. There's merit to that, to some extent.
Yeah. Now, my biggest fear in this conversation is that I don't do the conversation justice, because I ask the wrong questions, or I don't ask I ask too few questions, and we don't zoom in on the essence of things. Today is a general introduction, but you are going to set the scene for us in terms of the conversations over the next few weeks. So if we look at this mission statement and how they hope to unite and integrate all stakeholders, and we look at the whole industry, we unpack it, you know, the patient's journey and everything on the periphery and the distribution, and we look at all of those and we put that on the table. And we have to list the top 5-10 areas that need to transform dramatically for us to sort out this healthcare challenge that we have in our country. What would those be? So if we had to literally list and say, it's probably on a political level, it's probably on a, I don't know, on a structural level, it's probably on a, I don't know, you know, this is not the alpha and the omega, our conversation right now, but you can set the scene for us so that we can then prepare and ask the right questions in the future shows. What would you highlight as the transformation areas?
Well,
let's say the minister was listening to this. Let's say doctors were listening to the show. Let's say this is the ideal platform where all the practitioners are listening. This is our opportunity. It's not, but I mean, we'll make it that.
Well, look, early on we spoke about issues where you have schools where principals did a fantastic job and you have some schools that are failing, and the similar thing is applicable to hospitals.
Yeah.
Now, we have people that have an innate drive. They are natural leaders. They're naturally driven. They're natural project managers.
Mm.
And when you don't have that, you need accountability. And that, I think, is where we're lacking, where you have hospital managers and clinic managers that are accountable for the outputs of their facilities. Now, you need to have accountability at all levels, because in reality, you're not going to get a high number of those innately driven leaders. So once we start with that, the other pieces of the puzzle will start to fall into place. That's certainly something I would like to see.
Are you saying a culture of accountability?
Somehow. A culture of accountability. It's applicable in all the services that we expect. If you walk into a store and you had a problem with one of the employees or one of the goods that you've purchased or one of the services that you received, you'll ask to speak to that manager and you'll expect that situation, that problem to be resolved because that manager in that store is accountable. Why don't we expect the same for the health services that we go to?
So that's a very broad one, but super important. And people would say we need more accountability in education, in all kinds of, in the economy, in politics. And so that's probably a South African cultural challenge.
Well, certainly what I would start with is the academic hospitals, the tertiary hospitals, are the ones that are monitored more aggressively than any other hospitals at the moment.
Mm.
They have a large amount of expertise and so forth. I think we need to ensure that those hospitals have a high level accountability, and we need to ensure that those hospitals which have the resources are running at their optimal.
At least, yeah.
Absolutely. So it's a matter of going with the low-hanging fruit. if we were to say that we're going to ensure that all our primary healthcare facilities are world-class within the next year or 2 years, it's not going to happen. No, let's be realistic. No. That's not going to happen. But what we can do is that we can ensure that our academic hospitals are world-class.
So I'm just making a note here. All right.
Can I give you my five?
Give me your five.
So I think the first one would be leadership, governance, and accountability. And that goes straight from the MECs through the HODs to the CEOs and the people running each and every facility across the country. We need resources. We need to train more resources.
Is that point two?
It's point two.
So point two is resources,
The third one is around the...
Does resources unpack a little bit?
So resources, training enough doctors and nurses and lab technicians, across the whole medical provision.
Okay, experts,
Experts.
All right.
Mm-hmm. The third one, I think, is around infrastructure and equipment. So making sure that we have the right infrastructure in place, that the clinicians have access to the right equipment and it is working. The fourth one, I think, is probably the elephant in the room and the most difficult to do, is how do you build the trust between the public and the private sector? And how do you get the two sides of the coin, as it were, to work together to the success of the ultimate patient? So how do we leverage the learning that is already in the private sector into the public sector?
How do you build the kind of trust where the minister would gladly send his daughter to a public hospital?
Yeah.
There's trust in what's happening.
Yeah. And, the medical schemes have come up with really innovative ways of doing things. The private hospitals have as well. So let's use that. And then the last one, I think, is around the kind of technology and building new ways of delivering care, so that we don't necessarily need a one-to-one doctor relationship. So how is it, where we can, we use the web, we use new technologies to be able to provide that service, but not necessarily to be physically there with the patient.
Technology is a way that we in Africa, with limited resources, can potentially leapfrog the backlog, if I can put it that way.
Correct.
Very innovative technology, as we see all over the world happening.
And we're very lucky in South Africa. If you want to talk on your kind of your mobile access, we have a very high smart and feature phone penetration in the market. So let's leverage that.
How the heck do we do that? Correct. All right, Doctor, anything else you would put? You kicked off with a one, and then Judy came with her list. What else would you say we have to discuss in terms of what needs transformation?
Well, as you correctly pointed out, Judy, it will start at a political level as well. Mm. And accountability needs to start there.
Mm.
I mean, these are situations where a wrong decision could mean thousands of people are affected, hundreds of people could die. One wrong decision. Mm. It's the accountability. And we always talk about smart objectives.
Mm.
There has to be a timeline, a realistic timeline, which people are held accountable to.
Yeah. So what I've got here for a start, to kick us off for the next little while, is, and it's kind of the first two overlap, your comment on accountability on all levels, especially academic hospitals. Let's see the best there at least. Leadership, governance, accountability, so that overlaps with that one. Resources, training experts, having the right experts at all levels. But that's it's a tough one that often requires money. Infrastructure and equipment. Okay, that makes sense. We can train all the great people, but when they get out there and they don't have the equipment, what can they do? Trust between public and private sector. Yeah, and that comes with time. You earn trust. Technology in delivering new ways of care. All right, so that's a good start. Anything else that we can debate over the next few weeks? I know we also have specific months dedicated to specific, 1 month to diabetes and 1 month to cardio or to heart, or what do we call it? Cardio, yeah. And then the other month is, what's the other one?
Stroke.
So we can also bring that into the conversations. But to me, it's about, let's talk about the real issues. I think we did touch on some of them today, the real sensitive issues, the leadership issue, the attitudinal issues, and the fact that we're never going to have everything. We're never going to have all the resources and all the money we want. We see in the education industry, I think, where more of the fiscus of the budget goes to education in proportion, to students or whatever, than any other country in the world, perhaps, certainly in Africa. And yet our education system is very low. So we can throw all the money at a problem. It's not going to change the problem. We need more.
There's a very big difference between poor versus poorly run.
Yes. So thank you so much, Louis. I don't know if you have last comments before we close today's introductory conversation around transformation in the healthcare industry.
We live in a pretty tough world, but what you're doing is worth it. Please don't underestimate it. You know, it touches lives. It really does where it really matters the most. So be aware of it. And I say nourish it, your motivation all the time.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks.
All right, that's Dr. Shanil Naidu, Medical Director at Boehringer Ingelheim, and Judy Vondel, Senior Manager at Deloitte. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And maybe you'll be part of the future conversations. We'll see. But you've set the scene, and we look forward to the next few weeks. Thank you so much. All the best. Next up, our youth leadership platform, our baby. That's the area that makes such a difference. I mean, we have a conversation in youth, in the leadership show, in business, and then even now in the transformation platform, and we find that the word youth comes up. So next up, youth leadership platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.